/events. The top jockeys, the top trainers, big days, and world-class racing are all right here at the great race place Santa Anita Park.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Your face, mate. Class, isn't it?
We're back at Churchill Downs, joined by Kevin Kilroy and Caitlin Free, and the meet starts here tomorrow, but of course, Derby and Oaks cast a long shadow over everything that's going on, and before we talk about anything this weekend, let's get some overviews. Caitlin, some feelers that your direction, Oaks and Derby?
The Oaks, to me, is one of the more wide-open Oaks that I've seen in quite some time. Kind of has a similar type of a feel, I would say, to the 2022 edition that was won by Secret Oath. I remember thinking that year there's a number of horses that could go off favorite. I think there's about five horses for the Oaks that could go off favorite in this race. You know, Ways and Means, Leslie's Rose, Torpedo Anna, Tarifa, and a couple of others in there. That
just
are
FYI.
Just FYI. She was the one that I was missing. They've all been just doing so well in the mornings. Torpedo Anna and Just FYI have been the two that have really, really impressed me works wise and physically looking on the track. We talked to some people that are really well acquainted with Just FYI, and they said that she's doing just as well, if not better, she was when she was going to California out to the Breeders' Cup. And she really looks the part, and she really didn't miss any type of training time when she had that little bit of a fever. Just was kind of a, you know, we have to scratch because she is ill. But she went back to the track the very next day. So they really kind of missed nothing with her, and she really looks the part. As far as Derby goes, really my main focus when it comes to Derby is just trying to beat Fierceness. And, I mean, he's just a horse that I think he's going to be probably a significant favorite. He's wowed a lot of people in the mornings, but because he does things so easily, but he's just not the kind of horse. He's the favorite that you're supposed to try to beat because you can poke so many holes in a horse like him. He just isn't reliable.
Yeah. I think it's his, he hasn't proven his heart, right?
Yeah.
I think he hasn't shown that to us, but he might not have to, right?
If he
gets to the front and just goes, that would be my tactic.
If he gets the trip, he wins.
Yeah.
And Travis Stone has said it best. His best trip in this race is to draw favorably for his style and to do the American Fair or the Justify type of trip.
Yeah.
Just kind of sit on the outside away and not be undercover, but be not too far off the pace because he's shown he doesn't necessarily need to be on the lead. And there's no way I think he makes the lead in this race with horses like T.O. Password, Track Phantom with blinkers on, although the horse may try to relax a little bit more. But there's so many that are going to be so forward, and I think we're going to have the type of pace that's going to be really, really hot this year. So Fierceness just worries me a little bit. Getting out of the gate, I think, is going to be his main issue.
Yeah, I like that you said that because I have been seeing him on the lead to get it done. But yeah, without cover, outside, not having to split horses, not having to really do it in that type of style, that could work out really good for him too.
Yeah. Where are you, KK?
You know, my key horse right now is Catching Freedom. In terms of a horse that I've seen come on, a horse I've always been a fan of. I always thought in his races he's proven his heart, proven his start-stop ability. He's handy. He's gotten in trouble and been able to re-rally out of that. And then he came on in such a big way leading into the Louisiana Derby. And the question was, all right, well, this is something new in the mornings. What are we going to see from the afternoons? It could kind of go the other way. And that was outstanding to come from last to first against that pace. Flavian Pratt, I think, fits him like a glove. And he's the man out there right now. Reminds me a lot of Two Phils in terms of one who just wants you to know that he is he's on the scene. He's got his neck bowed. He's galloping just with such high cruising speed. And will he offer value? I think that's going to be the big question. You know, I did think Just a Touch would be on the shorter side of prices, you know, getting closer to this Derby, I think Catching Freedom is catching more people's eyes. And, of course, he's got that big grade 2 win to his resume.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I'd say between the two, Just a Touch is probably going to be the one that offers value. He kind of has a little bit of a Mage feel to me. Like, he's kind of stepping up to his best, but he's kind of had these second types of efforts, and but has had a little bit of excuses. So he seems to be kind of on the same pattern as, you know, Mage was, which of course we'll never know with Forte being out last year. If he would have won that race, and Mage would have finished second again.
Yeah.
But it just kind of seems like the same type of pattern and a similar type of horse to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Finished second to one of the likely favorite or second favorite in his last race before.
Yes.
And he's coming into his race here. He Just a Touch looked better to me today than I've seen, you know, in the previous days I've seen him out there, just in terms of his energy, you know, coming back from that bluegrass, that definitely took a lot out of him from my eye. And he just had a little bit more spring because he's a very energetic, you know, morning, you know, worker, galloper. He's got a lot of head rhythm and with his stride, and he kind of shows you that he's feeling good. I just hadn't quite seen that yet, but I think he might be coming around nicely.
Well, you still got, you know, got a full week of work, and we'll see about tomorrow, which is going to be a busy morning. We're going to try to get a quick word in before we wrap up with Mike Welch. What about your Philly thoughts?
You know, Just FYI is in that same camp as Catching Freedom. I just don't see anybody looking like she's tied in herself anymore than her. She just, that work, you know, that we saw early in the week, coming back quick after that one before, seemed like maybe we didn't get enough out of that previous work, so came back for another one, and she really flexed in a big way. She just looks outstanding. Torpedo Anna as well. She's just like a ballerina, you know, just out there just kind of dancing, just showing her grace. I'm really excited to see her run in there. And Monoma Gold, we're hearing maybe not, right?
Yeah,
we saw work today.
Out.
Yeah.
Officially?
That's what we heard from Kevin Kirstein. I believe that they will not supplement and won't go to the Oaks. That was what we were told. She worked today, but I believe at the moment the answer is no.
Yeah.
Well, that puts our pretty woman back in at least the catbird seat about getting in. But as Steve Asmussen said yesterday, when I said, you got to be getting a little antsy, and he admitted they were.
She deserves to be in the field.
Agreed. But at this, honestly, at this point, it's not like there's an endlessly or an Encino decision that's pending in the Philly field. I mean, these Phillies are all coming. So it's going to have to be, at this point, a hiccup from somebody. Something's going to have to go wrong, which is always, you know, unfortunate. All right. Well, we'll reconvene.
See, I gotta mention Tarifa and Jinjin. They looked sensational today, and it was good to see Tarifa just a little bit less aggressive, a little bit more relaxed at the beginning of the work. I think that's one of the things that I've seen from her sort of time and again, is that she really gets keen and gets ranked there at the beginning. We saw it in the first turn in the Fairgrounds Oaks. I think she looked better, and they finished up way past the track kitchen. They went well, and they had a ton of energy left at the end. I think those two might, you know.
Tarifa's the forgotten horse in the Oaks.
Possibly, right?
It's hard to believe, actually,
right,
considering, you know, usually point totals, you know, when you're at the top of a list all the time, that registers typically with people.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to be on a little tight timing here to get to Lisa Lazarus. Some thoughts about opening night? Anything that jumps out at you?
There was nothing specifically that jumped out at me, but there's some interesting horses, I thought, in the Roxalana, looking at Current Climate's one I'm pretty familiar with at Turfway. I think she's going to maybe be able to get a good type of trip in this race, maybe just slightly off of the pace, because it looks like there could be some pretty forward ones in that race. James mentioned a horse in that race as well. And horses coming out of Turfway typically do pretty well coming in here to Churchill. She didn't run at Keeneland. She's had a little bit of a breather, so I thought she was a little bit interesting there in that race.
Well, Eric Foster, who's going to send Everland out in the Oaks, and then there's a horse nobody's talked about at all.
No, not at all.
Well, she's not here, so that'll contribute to it, but she's over at the training center. But we'll look forward to...
She's a wild card.
Eric Foster's a great story, the Foster family racing with their base south of Ellis. All right, so there's the 3 and the 10, Speedy Traveler for James, and Current Climate, excuse me, for Caitlin.
Yeah, Speedy Traveler for me in there for sure. And then, you know, the first five races, I've done my handicap, and I'm just looking at the morning lines to see how I did. And seems like I'm seeing the ball with with Battaglia. See, I think it could be pretty chalky in those first five legs. Mm-hmm. Seeing Spycraft, I think, is quite nice in that first race. Barnaby is one that definitely was moving well as a two-year-old, and I think you know, we're spotted you know, for number six in the race two for Amos. Looks well spotted to run well. You know, Evie's Encore is the one of the Hartman runners in the undercard that I'm more interested in. I think this is her race in there. And just, you know, with in conversation with James was saying with
Counter-Strike.
Notorious 602, the other Hartman horse.
Oh.
I think she's run better, you know, not fresh. I think she's going to need one. I think she wants to go longer, too. Looking at the pedigree, I could see this as a prep.
Look for the Hartman barn to come out firing on opening
come
night.
Come out firing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, part of the early pick five, huh? You know? Well, I could be wrong about that one, but that's my thoughts there. And then Outador was obviously one that I was circling in on, but possibly Karatari. We've seen that fourth mm-hmm. start in the form cycle, maybe be that that best run, put the tag on, and maybe just want to send that one out with a win.
Finish the pick five, then.
What did I do for the pick five? Oh, yeah, pick five. Then I said who I was against, but I didn't say I was on. I'm on, you know, Bledsoe, I think, is interesting there. Obviously, Ward's got two. We'll see what he does with that. And then the number six, yeah, I'm chalky on these. Chryso Algo, Alogo. I think getting back to the dirt and to the sprint is a great angle. 38% new top for Sisterson going from turf to dirt. You got to pay attention to that sort of that angle on Thoroughgraph. So, you know, 5-2 in the morning line, though. So I'm gonna press multiple times. Steve.
There you go.
I'm gonna keep on pushing. Keep on pushing.
That's it. Until they run out of paper. Kevin Kilroy, everybody, trust your luck. And Caitlin E-free.
Yeah, my middle initial on Twitter.
You don't have a tag? I thought we had to have a tag. I thought we had to have a little.
I don't really have
slogan.
A tagline.
Let's get
I
you
mean,
a slogan.
Just my nickname, maybe. That everybody calls me Freeze around here.
Oh yeah, Freeze.
Nobody calls me by my real name here at Churchill, so that's just my nickname. But the middle initial on Twitter, I wanted my regular name on Twitter, but somebody else has it taken. There's another one
spelled
out
your
there.
Spelled your way,
spelled the exact same way.
Interesting, which is the K A I T L I N.
And not a common last name either. So,
yeah,
that was interesting to learn that there's another one of them out there.
How about that? Well, I will continue to call you Kate or Caitlin. I like the Kate, K-A-I-T.
I was going to say, Kate is my preferred type of nickname. I know you call me that. There's quite a few other people that do, but Freeze has stuck here for whatever reason.
All right. Well, I see if your coworkers give you a moniker, you roll with it. Guys, thanks so much. We'll talk next week, obviously, leading into Derby and Oaks.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you, Steve.
Caitlin Free and Kevin Kilroy. Let's bring Lisa Lazarus in, and thanks, guys. Got a couple of interesting topics for Lisa, and the news that came earlier this week about the diagnostic efforts and a 40 plus point program, essentially using every method of evaluation to try to identify any horses that are potentially at risk for any reason. Lisa Lazarus, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm sorry to be a little late. It's been kind of a crazy morning here.
Can you hear me well?
I hear you clear as a bell.
Great.
You're good. And also, the messaging is also clear as a bell in terms of you know, basically utilizing every tool you can think of. Talk about this initiative and, how people should anticipate its deployment.
Sure. So, you know, as you can imagine, after the situation last year at Churchill Downs and then Saratoga, you know, we were brainstorming all the time about whether or not there was additional support, especially since our database had grown so significantly because we have such good cooperation from our stakeholders now. How could we use all that data to help support the industry, trainers, veterinarians, to make sure that horses that are at risk of getting injured don't actually race? And one of the things that we did in the last weekend of Saratoga is we used this post-screening evaluation method through our internal vets, Dr. Jennifer Durenberger, Dr. Karen Hassan, And actually, the outcome of that process was quite predictive when we compared it to the outcomes at Saratoga for that final weekend. So we thought, you know what, we should really try to make a more sophisticated model based on that. And also in California, there's something called the Governor's Panel that does something similar. And so we're looking at all of these models and thinking, you know, with AI, with all the data we have, we should be able to kind of do this at a, you know, at a much bigger level. And we ultimately, we reached out to different companies and had different conversations, and we ultimately landed with a company called Palantir that has, you know, a stellar record in terms of intelligence and investigations and data analytics, and also working with Amazon Web Services for their support too. We built a model that takes, as I said before, 44 risk factors and feeds them into an analytical process that weights those factors differently based on data that we have in terms of their importance, and then assigns a risk assessment number, a numerical assessment to each horse. And we do it every day for every race car. We're still beta testing it. We haven't deployed it nationally yet. We have the 10 veterinarians that are receiving it as we make it better and as the machine learning makes it better. But the way it's intended to be used is to support the veterinarian on the ground. There's no substitute for a veterinarian looking at a horse, feeling a horse. But we can make them a lot more effective and also give them more time to spend with horses during pre-race exams by using this tool. And so we've had really good response to it so far. And we're really excited about, you know, what it can do in the future.
Well, and of course, part of this, for anybody that saw the reporting on, you know, the information system, the tool itself, this is the first opportunity during a Derby week and the lead up to, you know, to the Triple Crown season, for HISA to, you know, implement the safety program, essentially the safety and welfare program as it's constructed. And so, you know, showcasing something like this, especially, Lisa, in light of, you know, some of the critique that is predictable. In fact, I started the show this morning with Bill Finley, with him having seen the New York Times FX Hulu documentary, yeah, nonsense. So having, you know, having pieces of a puzzle like this, you know, to honestly to flaunt as something that the industry has crafted in hopes of keeping horses out of harm's way, you know, the publicity is really important and you know, needs to be heralded.
I think so too. And I think one of the things that's really remarkable and quite special about it is that it's not something that HISA did on an island. You know, the only way that we could make this work is by having tremendous industry participation. So we built the model, you know, in partnership with Palantir and AWS, but we built it based on what the industry has given us, primarily veterinarians, but also trainers, and also, you know, relying and connecting with other data sources out there that exist. And so it truly is, in my view at least, an industry initiative. And we are at a time, I think, when the vast majority of horse racing realizes that, you know, we need to convince the public that we're doing a whole lot, and we are doing a whole lot. And I think that represents or reflects how much trainers, owners, veterinarians, you know, love our horses. And so we need to be able to share that, I think, with the public in a way that's more understandable to them and also shows that really we're all focused on keeping racing as safe as possible. And that that's the first thing that we think of, you know, when we bring a horse to the track.
Yeah, no doubt. And give us a if you can, and I'm
sure.
Not going to have you list them, but explain the number is 44, 44 potential risk factors. How are they assembled, derived, and can you provide some examples of what those factors are?
Sure. So to start with, you know, we begin with a you know, relying on the equine injury database and some of the information that's been available there and compiled over a long period of time. And, you know, the great job that Tim Parkin has done and just the contributions and the focus there, we can look at certain trends, right? And we can then test those out against our system. You know, we've been using this model and running it against race cards for about 6 months now. You know, we've been running it to see what works, what doesn't work, and what our programmers do is they will look at a factor, and if they're not sure whether or not that factor is helpful or contributes anything, they'll take it out of the model and they'll compare essentially what the model predicted with that factor and without to see whether or not that factor had a positive or negative effect. So some examples of factors are layoffs, right? We have about six different categories of layoffs because different numerical, we found that a layoff can be a risk factor. It's not always, of course, but it can be a risk factor. And that the extent to which it is a risk factor is connected in part to how many days the layoff has been and whether or not, and just sort of whether or not it also is matched with a veterinarian's list, a pre-existing injury. You know, we also look at drop in class, and we probably have about five or six categories on, you know, that relate to drop in class. You know, one might be between the last race and the current entry. One might be, you know, between the last entry and a good performance or a poor performance. So there's a number of permutations that relate to class drop. There are some factors around claiming that can sometimes be helpful to us. We certainly look at poor performance. We look at, you know, a veterinarian's list, of course. We look at injection history. We look at whether or not a horse has had, you know, a multiple unsoundness. So, you know, there are lots of different things that we look at that you would expect that are not, you know, that are not going to be news to anyone and are not rocket science, but the value of the algorithm and the machine learning is we can keep running it against, you know, we do the predictive thing before the race, but then the value, the benefit is that we have the results at the end of the race. So we can keep running it against our model to make it better and better.
All right. And so essentially you're using 44. I mean, has that number come up and down or?
Yes, that number does. And it will. I think we started off with like 26 and then we found more factors that contributed to the accuracy of the model. Some may eventually come off because we find that they're neutral. They don't have an impact one way or the other. Some might come off because maybe they have the opposite effect, is that they're actually making our, you know, the model less accurate. And then certainly there'll be more that get added that we find we haven't considered and we should consider. So it's an evolution. And the part that I want to be clear about is that, you know, it's already valuable because essentially it can look at a race card and just help a veterinarian identify on that race card where they should focus their efforts in terms of examinations. But it's just going to get better and better all the time in terms of the two metrics that we look at, false negatives and false positives. We have very few false negatives, so that's important. We do have still, you know, a number of false positives. As you can imagine, a horse may be at risk, but then it runs a perfectly good race. So we're going to continue to work on getting that number down. And you know, that's the beauty of AI and machine learning is that you can just, there's no limit to how long, you know, how much you can continue to improve things.
How is this information going to be utilized essentially? Is there going to be a red flag system to, you know, to identify horses that need, you know, more careful pre-race examinations? Are trainers going to be consulted?
Yes.
Is the information going to be published?
So at this point in time, we haven't, you know, we haven't really looked at the question of whether we're going to publish it and make it publicly available. Because you can imagine there's a lot of repercussions to that, and we need to really think through some of these complicated issues. It is very important, though, to understand how it is intended to be used and how it's being used. And that is as a supportive tool to the veterinarians on the ground. So exactly what you just said is that it helps with pre-race exams. You know, it will help a veterinarian determine whether or not he or she should spend more time with a particular horse. And, you know, especially when you have some racetracks who really have, you know, don't have a ton of resources in terms of veterinarians available. And so it makes the veterinarians' time more efficient. And if they have, you know, 50 or 100 horses to look at pre-race, they don't have the time to necessarily give every single horse as thorough a review as they would like. They use that tool to understand where they should focus their efforts. But there's no substitute, you know, for a veterinarian on the ground looking at the horse. And it's not intended at all to be a guide to scratching. It's intended to be a guide to support veterinarians to do their work better. The same way that, you know, if a patient comes in to see a doctor, you want every element of their history you can possibly get to be able to know what to look for and where to be more careful in your examination.
So this is, so at least for now, this is more of a back end diagnostic tool to, you know, to help formulate policy and directions.
Yeah, I would say that, and also just to help from a practical matter, you know, on the ground with quicker information and information that's very digestible. So, you know, when the report comes out, and you could easily rank within a race card who the model believes is most at risk in that on that race card of getting hurt, you know, you would imagine that the vet would spend the majority of its time on those top two, three horses because of we know that the model is quite successful in terms of its predictive analysis.
Well, then, I mean, the logical, I hate to do this, but the logical question is, if it's having predictive success, do you have a strike rate, essentially, of horses that the system has identified that then have actually pulled up and been stricken?
So that's what I was talking about earlier, is that the two metrics that we look at are false negatives and false positives. We have very few false positives. In other words, we don't, with very few false negatives, we are not making mistakes in terms of predicting missing horses that might be at risk. For the horses that do have a negative outcome, and that doesn't necessarily be an injury, it could be they didn't finish, they were scratched before the race, a veterinary scratch, those horses we're doing a good job predicting. But we're also capturing a number of horses that successfully finished the race. And that's where we need to get better to really maximize the value of the tool, because there's still a number of horses that we, the system thinks might very well be at risk of injury or have a good chance of being at risk, but still finish the race successfully. And so we don't, you know, we want to be really careful about using it in this positive way, because, you know, there's a lot of horses still that may be, you know, may raise a flag, but ultimately after an examination are cleared and do fine.
When you talk about the veterinarian input, are we talking regulatory vets?
Yes, regulatory vets.
No. Yes. What about the racetrack practitioners?
So we're starting with regulatory vets because they're the ones who do the pre-race exams, and that's where we think the tool is going to be most supportive. But once we get past this beta testing and we're ready to roll it out more broadly, then we'll definitely start, you know, seeing how we can also be supportive to the racetrack vets. And in some cases, racetrack vets, you know, in some states, the racetrack vets are the ones who conduct pre-race exams.
Right.
So,
true.
You know, they would be included in the first go around.
Well, you know, we talked about this initiative, I don't know, maybe now 60 or 90 days ago. And, you know, so now it feels like it's that much further down the, you know, down the process track. And how will we as stakeholders and players and fans, et cetera, how will you report essentially, you know, utilize the information for public consumption? That's sort of back to the same question about, you know, about publishing data.
Yeah, so I mean, that's, as I said, those are questions. You know, the model poses a whole lot of philosophical questions and questions about policy that impact the industry that we need to be really careful about and consider, you know, across a broad spectrum of stakeholders to make sure that we're deploying it in a way that's supportive and helpful to the industry. You know, hopefully we won't need to evaluate its effectiveness with the Derby, because hopefully you know, every horse will finish safely, et cetera. But, you know, we look every day at whether or not it's been effective in any jurisdiction. And so, you know, we'll continue to sort of update the industry on how well it's doing, and then, you know, eventually hopefully be able to provide more specific data.
Is it being used on a test on a test group, or is it being applied at all HISA tracks?
No, so right now it's going to about 10 regulatory veterinarians who have signed up to be part of this initial beta test. And what they do is they provide feedback to us on, you know, what's useful, what they think has been effective, and we feed that, you know, that feedback back into the system while we're simultaneously running the model against the race card, you know, and against the results for the machine learning to take effect and for the model to recognize where it's been strong and where it's been wrong, where it's been weak. Yeah.
How long do you envision a beta test before it's put into active use?
Yeah, we hope to be sending it to every racetrack in the country by July 1.
Very good. Lisa Lazarus with us as we follow up on this week's news item about the Plantier data tool as a predictive system and you know, something that can help take horses out of harm's way. Lisa, earlier this morning, I happened to reach out to Chris Katulek at Fonner Park, and you know, they're concluding a season that saw them, much like what's gone on in Texas, unable to have their signal exported widely. And with Nebraska, and at least with Fonner, they don't have issues with the constitutionality question. They've got a problem with the assessment that they were asked to pay for HISA supervision. What can be done in a case like this? The Jockey Club talked at a round table about investing in racetracks. Why wouldn't they pick up the tab on a place like Fonner?
You know, we had very extensive conversations with Fonner Park before they decided not to export their signal. And we were amenable to all different ideas around, you know, making that burden easier for them and ultimately sort of working out some sort of arrangement that would be manageable. They weren't interested in that at that time. I hope they ultimately changed their mind. But as you can imagine, like from a HISA standpoint, we have to balance the need to support racetracks, particularly ones that have financial challenges, which also making sure that the racetracks are safe enough to meet our expectations. We don't expect every racetrack to right away be up to, you know, the same level as maybe the racetracks with the best safety protocols in place. But we certainly need them to follow, you know, the fundamental rules and to work with us at getting to that place. And Fonner, you know, just wasn't willing to go down that road with us initially. And I certainly hope it'll change. And if they want to work with us, we'll absolutely work with them. I can't answer for the Jockey Club in terms of their contribution, but I know the Jockey Club has definitely, done a lot for a number of racetracks. And I'm sure, you know, this is something that they can potentially be consulted about.
Finally, as I mentioned, Bill Finley joined us, and I'm sure you saw Bill's review, as
yes,
it were, of the broken horses nonsense. Are you guys in a position to provide a reaction statement, confronting or refuting what appears to be a myriad of misinformation?
You know, HISA spends every day, all day, thinking about safety and sharing with our stakeholders and public at large all the different things that we're doing. We just spent, 20 minutes talking about the Palantir project. So we're out there, all the time, I think, doing that work. And I do believe it's having an impact. I also think that the Safety Runs First campaign that was led by the Thoroughbred Safety Coalition, which included the Breeders' Cup, Keeneland, NYRA, that campaign is really excellent, and it just started, I think, a few days ago, and will run through the Triple Crown period and reach, I think, the number of stakeholders. They even had a 30-second commercial, I think, at the draft last night, the NFL draft. So, you know, there's a lot of people doing a lot of things, and what our research has shown us with regards to the public reaction to horse racing is that if the public believes that we care and we're taking steps to make the industry as safe as possible, that's satisfactory for the majority of them. And I really believe that we've checked that box, and that I'm hoping, I haven't seen the documentary yet. I was delighted that Bill didn't mention my name in it because it suggests to me that I'm not heavily featured, even though I was interviewed for it. But I truly believe and hope that anybody who watches that documentary will think of it as a tale of the past. You know, things that have happened in the past that, you know, or don't reflect everyone in horses by any means, but reflected perhaps a weakness or a period that, or episodes that we're not proud of, but we've done so much since then, and the future looks so bright. And I'm not just talking about highs. I mean, you know, safety initiatives have been on the forefront, you know, for a while, and a lot of folks in the industry are really demonstrating that they care. I mean, you even have the sales companies who have come out recently and agreed on certain changes. So there's just a lot of folks who have agreed that it's an all hands on deck moment. And I believe the public will see that, certainly with the efforts and the campaigns around the Derby.
All right. I would prefer to bludgeon these attacks with reality. Facts. One thing that we've lacked is the messaging portion of Safety Runs First. Tom was with us yesterday, and the Light Up Racing, the Light Up Racing project has got, you know, tangible answers to, you know, to refute misinformation and what really amounts to smears. I mean, at this point, yeah, they're smears. There's no mm-hmm. you know, people are, you know, Bill, you know, was being, I think, generous, saying, you know, we're not trying to attack the messenger or whatever. Yes, there are issues. And those issues have been addressed quickly and successfully, for years and years and years. I mean, whenever there's been something that could be construed as a crisis, or, you know, in some cases, even those were manufactured by specifically the New York Times. We've answered a lot of the things, and virtually all the things that are going to be dredged up again, apparently, in this thing. So bullies know how to, you know, they respond to one thing, and that's being hit in the face. And we need to be doing a little more of that.
Yeah, and I really do think that the industry has come together recently to do more. You know, we often get the criticism that there's not one central body that's in charge of PR for horse racing, like you might see at the professional sports leagues. But, you know, a lot of industry actors, especially the ones that I named earlier, have put, you know, money, resources, time, effort against making the public understand, you know, everything we do and how our horses are treasured and cared for, and that the industry, the sport, really has done a fantastic job of addressing the problems in it. You know, that process never stops.
Right.
But the industry is at a really good place, I believe. And I think the public is going to see that.
All right. Well, that's all of our responsibility. Lisa Lazarus, as always, fabulous. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Steve.
You're coming to Derby, yes?
Yes, I am. I'll be down on Tuesday.
You have a Derby horse yet?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm actually not allowed to gamble on horse racing, believe it or not. So I try to avoid thinking about which horse I'm going to pick.
All right. All right. Steve, I won't press you on that. All right, you got 20.
You.
That means you have 20 Derby horses.
Exactly. My Derby pick is for them all to finish safely.
Well, there you go. Well done. Yeah. Lisa Lazarus, right, Everybody. Thanks.
Thank
Lisa.
You, Steve.
All right.
Take care.
Terrific. There. That was, All right, now we're in trouble, and I see that Warlock. Thanks to Steve Carlin, I see he says Warlock Goddess is scratched out of the Bewitched today, which will open things considerably because she was what 3-5. We got 10 and 10 essentially, or 8 and 8 to spend with Hammer and with Nick. I know Hammer had modest stuff, and we got plenty of time, obviously, to talk about Kentucky Downs. I mean, we're months away, but that was going to be one of our topics. We'll get a few pops in with Rick. And I think, yep, here he is. Hammer, good morning.
Hey, Steve, good morning to you. Busy morning there in Louisville.
This has been a 5-alarm fire right from the break. Let me dive in, and I mentioned Kentucky Downs. Exciting news there. You had a busy and fast trip yourself to Kentucky, and
catch up. Went to last Sunday, my first trip to April at Keeneland, and just like the postcard looks like, it was beautiful. Had a great day, nice cool weather, and saw a lot of people. So that was it's actually kind of neat. People were very surprised. It was my first time there, but hey, we're always working, during that time. So happy to do that. Took a little drive down to Kentucky Downs on Monday, and I'll tell you what, took a little ride on the golf course around the turf course. That looks like we could run tomorrow. Doing a little construction, adding a few things on the front side, which I think will be good. A couple extra little place to put some suites. Going to add some more tents. This is like at the mid-stretch. Some different food options, maybe some burgers and chicken and things like that. And each year it seems do a little bit more, both on the horseman side and the fan side. So, and I think they're going to add, I not think, they're going to begin adding a 10,000 square foot sports book at the north end of the grandstand there, too. That'll be going on. So a lot of stuff going on at church. Wow. At Kentucky Downs, and had some successful industry meeting on Tuesday, which we will get into later when things start to bubble up to the surface, which I think is positive, and got back into town. Took a quick drive last night down to San Diego area. Drove by that pier that burned down on the way down. I don't know if you've seen, it's been national news, Oceanside pier burned down, but came down here to San Diego State University to see Neil Young last night. Couldn't leave Neil out of the mix.
Cool.
And still here and head up, and it just keeps on keeps on rolling. And the stakes schedule, and then we had the Hall of Fame. I wanted to mention that real quickly. I'm not going to talk anymore about who didn't get in, but congratulations to Joel Rosario, who we've known a long time, and has that infectious smile and keeps riding winners, congratulations to him to get in at a real young age. And then the two horses, of course, Gunrunner, everybody knows, but Justify, who was kind of a special story for me. Followed him along, obviously, since that day Bob walked in the office and said, "Hey, I got a horse that can win the Derby. Let's make that maiden race." And on from there. So that was kind of special to see have him go in there too. So kind of cool. Santa Anita is back. Back going, 11 race card tomorrow and a nice card on Sunday, including the Kona Gold Stakes and the Royal Heroine tomorrow. So the break seems to have helped a little bit on field size. They've put enough, and it should to the end of the meet. A nice break will do that. And Sunday, and a 9 race card there. And the Coast to Coast is back. Let's mention that. Saturdays anyway, we'll mention Santa Anita races 4, 5, and 7. mixed in with Gulfstream's 10th and 11th, and it begins at 5:30 Eastern and ends at 7. So in 90 minutes, you get that. But I think the bigger news as far as industry-wide, the Kentucky Downs stake schedule and condition book was released yesterday, and a lot of zeros.
Yeah, that's apparent, and not to mention the name change on the Derby. They're trying to draw the Nashville crowd into get them to take ownership of the Derby.
Well, let's face it. And for those that don't know, Nashville's 20 miles south, due south, right on the highway there. So it's the nearest city. It's where you fly into. And, when I first got there in 2019, did the same thing, not really name it, but we started giving away guitars. I said, let's give away a guitar. We renamed Erase Music City, of course, after that. And so we used to give away a guitar for the Music City stakes. And now we pretty much give a guitar away for all the graded races, and usually signed by a country music star. And it just fit that a race should have the national name attached to it. And lo and behold, it's a 3-year-olds, which 3-year-olds are still in action and seem to be the now division even into September. So yeah, the National Derby will be $2.5 million. And it includes the KTDF fund of $1 million. And thanks to the KTDF fund is why these purses are enhanced for the Kentucky Breds. It's all about the Kentucky Breds at Kentucky Downs. And, but the purses are so high to begin with that even if you're not a Kentucky Bred, you're running for a lot of money. And, we think it'll probably, open the eyes of some of the European divisions that can come and run there and maybe stay and use it as a prep for the Breeders' Cup.
Very nice. I imagine that the Europeans will take note and having Martin Panza involved in the staff will certainly go a long way on that front.
Yeah, it's pretty kind of wild. But Ted was talking about it, so. Ted Nicholson, who is the, runs the show for Mr. Winchell and Mr. Falcone there. Ted and Martin and I, we all went to school together. So we were all in the same class way back when in the 80s at the University of Arizona. And, it's oddly enough, my Martin and I, obviously we've known each other that long. We've never worked at the same place before. Well, of course, we worked together on things because we were, he was at Hollywood Park and I was at Santa Anita, and we'd been on various committees before. And I'd never worked with Ted before there either. So here we are, it's like a class reunion here, like 35 some years later. So kind of neat. So, Martin's more well versed in the European stuff with his work at Belmont and things like that. So he'll help with that. And, it's all one big team there. Tyler's the captain of the ship, Tyler Picklesheimer, and the crew from Kentucky is one of the great, best I've worked with, runs the show. And we just try and help push it along as best we can. And it's a great 7 days, and I'm sure we'll hear more about it as we get closer.
Hammer, before I bring Nick in, I should mention one of the graded stake, very few graded stakes this weekend. One of them happens to be the Grade 3 San Francisco being run for the last time, obviously at Golden Gate. It's a nice 12-horse field and pretty competitive. Astronomer for Simon Callahan looks quite good, and there's actually a horse, Llamas, the two, from Manny Badia, that is 12-1 that I thought had a little bit of a consideration. So,
yeah, the San Francisco Mile, one of Northern California, that along with the Golden Gate handicap was there for a long time, and the last one, and I'm talking to a few people, trying to make plans to get up there one last time, and maybe you know, depending on the Belmont plans, if they head back for the Belmont, obviously that won't happen, but maybe able to get their closing day. But who knows? Maybe that name will survive down south.
Yeah, there you go. But, there you go.
All right. Well, I know you got to get Nick on, and we'll talk later in the week, and we'll see you guys at the races or at a music hall. You never know.
What? He's liable to turn up, not just either, but both. Hammer, everybody. Away they go. Let me quickly get to Nick. We got 5 minutes to get probably the cross country. And we'll talk to Nick Monday with the Derby pace quadrants that we always do. We break the field, you know, speed, stock, mid-pack, and closers. And gives us a good feel. We'll do that on Monday. Nick, good morning.
Good morning.
You want to do cross country quick?
Sure. Yeah.
Whatever you want.
Yeah, it's anyway, getting close to, of course, the big time. And always exciting, no doubt about it. So I'm gonna join you for what? Monday pace looks?
Monday.
Should be fun.
Yep, we'll do the pace.
Yeah, and we'll know by then everybody who's training well and everybody who's not, and I'm sure everybody will be because they're all running in the Derby, so they're good. Anyway, so yeah, the cross country, and I will admit I'm a little behind on the Oaklawn portion of it. Have paid some attention to Aqua. Great to have grass racing back in New York, and the weather's been decent enough to enable them to be on the turf for the most part so far. The sequence tomorrow starts with Aqueduct, and this is a tough race to kick it off. I did think to a great extent that down on the inside, Prince James was a little interesting at 6-1, Dylan Davis for Ray Handel. I also think that these races, and we saw a winner yesterday for Mary Lee's Coffee that had this kind of profile, you're going to really, really stay on top of horses that might be sneakily moving forward when you're looking at speed figures, horses that may have gotten better on whether it's Thoroughgraphs or buyer figures or, you know, any figure that you use. So with that said, I would take a horse like First Deputy and probably be a little bit more inclined to go against him, especially with the connections in there with IRAT riding for Rudy Rodriguez. I think this horse is going to be over bet. So I'll mainly use Prince James. Clem Labine on the outside, I felt like was one that you could make a bit of a case for. The second leg is at Oaklawn. And again, this is a race where I think Penn Street and the two inside runners will largely dominate the attention. I didn't have a tremendously long look at it, but we'll probably take a little bit more of one and give some info out on Twitter. The Chad Brown trained overacting is going to be a big favorite in the third leg and should be particularly tough. Although Roagna is interesting for Jimmy Bond coming back off the layoff. She was a very impressive debut winner. We'll see if she gets any better as a three-year-old. I think there's a pretty decent chance she could, and she'll be a square price as well. So fourth race is back over at Oaklawn. It's the Bachelor, and may not be one of the tougher versions of this race we've seen, but Time for Truth is getting back to what he wants to do, having been stretched out. Valentine Candy's back on the right surface as well, now back on dirt, so they felt like the principal's there. And and then the Nightcap's back on turf. Final leg is back on turf at Aqueduct. We're all good here. Gets back on the weeds. New gelding, Christophe Clement. I ran from the inside. I felt like it kind of started and stopped there. So kind of an abbreviated look at the cross-country sequence. Still some opportunities to make a little money before the big weekend.
There you go. And I'm hoping we'll have a say in that Nightcap at Aqueduct.
Yep, I agree.
On the stretch out. I you know, it's funny. At first, I thought it was, at first glance, I thought, ugh, this is a, because you know, we were hoping to run today, and we ended up on the AE list just randomly. And then I thought, this is going to be, and then the closer I looked at it, and especially layering in the figs, if he stretches out, Shazando's is as liable as anybody in there. So
I agree. He seems to show up every time.
Yeah, exactly. The mile we've never done on the grass. We ran a mile on the dirt. But there you go. All right, Nick, I appreciate the quick look. I wanted to give a couple of opinions, and we'll look forward to our first serious glance at Derby on Monday morning.
Sounds great, Steve. Have a good weekend. Thank you.
Thank you. Nick Tamaro, everybody, and Tam, 1215. And somehow we managed to pull this off. I don't ask me how. A couple of quick couple of quick promotions about Monday night and Tuesday night. Monday night, we're doing the Champions Night at the Manhattan Project. This is for Second Stride. Secondstride.org if you're in town. It's $20 for a ticket. And we'd love to have you. It's me and Doug Knackman and Andy Biancone. It was her birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Andy. And Byron King. We're going to analyze Oaks and Derby. Then the Trainers Dinner. You absolutely, if you're in town Tuesday and don't have plans yet, tickets are $225. It's after racing, 5 o'clock cocktails, dinner at 6:30, and lots of entertainment. All the Derby trainers and their owners and more. It's terrific. First time here at the new gorgeous First Turn Club, KTA, Kentucky Derby Trainers Dinner. I'll put up link for you as well. All right? Thanks to everybody. Bill Finley, Chris Katulik, Dick Powell, Ron Gierkink, Marcus Hirsch, Scully, Free, and KK, Lisa Lazarus, Hammer, and Nick Tamaro. Talk to you Monday, everybody.
Horsemen, nominate now for Penn National's biggest day of the season, the $400,000 Grade 3 Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Oaks will both be run Friday, May 31st, on a card that also includes two Pennsylvania bred stakes, each with a $100,000 purse. Call the racing office at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse, 800-233-8238. That's 800-233-8238. Nominations close May 15th.
We're racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky. Please consider Bleeder Shield, the leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, divining rights.